Chapter 9. In the morning, Carl and his outfit started for the Salt Lick, and Garrick, Abdullah, Imkola, and I crossed the road, angled behind the village up a dry water course, and started climbing the mountains in a mist. We headed up a pebbly, boulder-filled, dry stream bed overgrown with vines and brush so that climbing, you walked, stooping, in a steep tunnel of vines and foliage. I sweated so that I was soaked through my shirt and undergarments, and when we came out on the shoulder of the mountain and stood, looking down at the bank of clouds quilting over the entire valley below us, the morning breeze chilled me, and I had to put on my raincoat while we glassed the country. I was too wet with sweat to sit down, and I assigned Garrick to keep on going. We went around one side of the mountain, doubled back on a higher grade, and crossed over, out of the sun that was drying my wet shirt, and along the top of a series of grassy valleys, stopping to search each one thoroughly with the field glasses. Finally, we came to a sort of amphitheater, a bowl-like valley of very green grass with a small stream down the middle and timber along the far side and all the lower edge. We sat in the shadow against some rocks, out of any breeze, watching with the glasses as the sun rose and lighted the opposite slopes, seeing two kudu cows and a calf feed out from the timber, moving with the quickly browsing, then head-lifting, long-staring vigilance of all browsing animals in a forest. Animals on a plain can see so far that they have confidence and feed very differently from animals in the woods. We could see the vertical white stripes on their gray flanks. It was very satisfying to watch them and to be high in the mountain that early in the morning. Then, while we watched, there was a boom, like a rock slide. I thought at first it was a boulder falling, but Imkola whispered, "Wana, Gaibor, Piga." We listened for another shot, but we did not hear one, and I was sure Carl had his kudu. The cows we were watching had heard the shot and stood listening, then went on feeding, but they fed into the timber. I remember the old saying of the Indian in camp, "One shot meat, two shots maybe, three shots heap shit," and I got out the dictionary to translate it for Imkola. However it came out seemed to amuse him, and he laughed and shook his head. We glassed that valley until the sun came onto us, then hunted around the other side of the mountain, and in another fine valley saw the place where the other Bwana Doctor, he still sounded like, had shot a fine bull kudu. But a Maasai walked down the center of the valley while we were glassing it, and when I pretended I was going to shoot him, Garrick became very dramatic, insisting it was a man, a man, a man. "Don't shoot men?" I asked him. "No, no, no," he said, putting his hand to his head. I took the gun down with great reluctance, clowning for Imkola, who was grinning, and it's very hot now. We walked across a meadow where the grass was knee-high and truly swarming with long, rose-colored, gauze-winged locusts that rose in clouds about us, making a whirring-like mowing machine, and climbing small hills and going down a long, steep slope, we made our way back to camp to find the air of the valley drifting with flying locusts and Carl already in camp with his kudu. Passing the Skinner's tent, he showed me the head which looked bodiless and neckless, the cape of hide hanging loose, wet and heavy from where the base of the skull had been severed from the vertebral column, a very strange and unfortunate kudu. Only the skin running from the eyes down to the nostrils, smooth gray and delicately marked with white, and the big, graceful ears were beautiful. The eyes were already dusty, and there were flies around them, and the horns were heavy, coarse, and instead of spiraling high, they made a heavy turn and slanted straight out. It was a freak head, heavy and ugly. Pop was sitting under the dining tent, smoking and reading. "Where's Carl?" I asked him.
"In his tent, I think. What did you do?"
"Worked around the hill, saw a couple of cows." "I'm awfully glad you got him," I told Carl at the mouth of his tent. "How was it?"
"We were in the blind, and they motioned me to keep my head down. And then when I looked up, there he was right behind us. He looked huge."
"We heard you shoot. Where'd you hit him?"
"Yeah, in the leg first, I think. Then we trailed him, and finally I hit him a couple more times, and we got him."
"I heard only one shot."
"Yeah, there were three or four," Carl said.
"I guess the mountain shut off some if you were gone the other way trailing him. He's got heavy beam and a big spread."
"Thanks," Carl said. "I hope you get a lot better one. They said there was another one, but I didn't see him."
I went back to the dining tent where Pop and POM were. They had not seemed very elated about the kudu. "What's the matter with you?" I asked.
"Did you see the head?" POM asked.
"Sure."
"It's awful looking," she said.
"It's a kudu. He's got another one still to go."
"Charo and the tracker said there was another bull with this one, a big bull with a wonderful head." That's all right, I'll shoot him.
If he ever comes back.
It's fine he has one, POM said.
I'll bet he'll get the biggest one ever known now, I said.
I'm sending him down with Dan to the Sable Country, Pop said. That was the agreement, the first to kill a kudu to get first crack at the Sable.
That's fine.
Then, as soon as you get your kudu, we'll move down there too.
Good.